And we are back on the Now program Wednesday, February the 12th, 2020, 14 minutes past the hour. And, you know, sometimes timing just works out perfectly because last night when I was putting this show together, I did not think about this, but the guest we have this morning is the perfect person to have on the morning after the all-important New Hampshire primary. Actually, this person is great to have on anytime, and since last we spoke, we have had the impeachment of a president, we have had the acquittal of a president, we have had a very eventful State of the Union address, we have had an Iowa caucus, we have had a lot of things going on, so it will not be hard to fill the next 45 minutes with our guest this hour. But before we go to the guest, I've been teasing it all morning. We have to make this big announcement, and it is truly a big announcement because in the world of news, we use the word exclusive a lot now. And truly the definition of the word exclusive is something that does not and will not happen anywhere else. That's what an exclusive is. And tomorrow on this show, we truly have that. Now, here's what's going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, starting at 8:15 in the morning on this show through 10 o'clock, we are going to blow out everything. It will be a two-hour live uninterrupted conversation. Now, you're saying to yourself, why would you do that? Who's going to be the guest for 2 hours uninterrupted tomorrow morning? Well, here's why we're doing that. For everything we just said, State of the Union address, President Trump being impeached, President Trump being acquitted, the Iowa caucus, the New Hampshire primary, all of these things, this person has not spoken out on any of them anywhere. A matter of fact, this person does not do interviews very often. It is a rare occasion when this person does an interview. This person has almost been as elusive as Johnny Carson was when he left The Tonight Show. He doesn't do interviews. He's kindly going to do it for us tomorrow, live for 2 hours. I don't know what he'll say, but here it is. Tomorrow morning, starting at 8:15, 2 hours, live interrupted on this station, sharing his thoughts on everything, we will be joined by the man who created the issue-oriented daytime talk show and still has the record for the longest-running talk show in daytime history, Phil Donahue, on this show, live tomorrow, 8:15 to 10 o'clock. Don't miss that for love nor money. A matter of fact, don't miss today for love nor money, because after a big announcement like that, the only thing that could top it is for me to say we're going to talk about all that today with a man whose name is synonymous with the news and has been for more than a half century. He covered Watergate. He covered the Bill Clinton impeachment. He was the host of a number one news magazine, Primetime Live on ABC. He hosted the Sunday morning shows with Sam and Cokie. It is always my honor to welcome to these microphones the very intellectual, the very concise, the newsman's newsman, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, Scott, I'm very delighted to be on your program this morning and to be a warm-up act for Donahue. I like Donahue. I know Donahue. Donahue's a friend of mine. And could I listen tomorrow? Well, if you give me a special line, I'll be delighted to join you.
I certainly will do that. And you know, Sam, it's so interesting because Phil does not do interviews often anymore.
Well, I know. I think he still... I haven't seen him in years. I haven't heard him for years, but I'm excited about having him on. Now, you earlier talked about me being on this morning and said it was a perfect phone call? No, don't use that phrase, and nor am I going to be a perfect guest. But we'll talk about everything, and I suppose beginning with New Hampshire.
Exactly, and Sam was on with us, I think, back in October, and none of the impeachment things have happened, so we'll talk about that all. But New Hampshire happened last night, and very interestingly, if you haven't heard yet, Bernie Sanders is being declared the winner here, 25%. That was kind of thought to be, but the rest of it's interesting. Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, 24%, number two. Amy Klobuchar coming in at 19.8%, number three. Elizabeth Warren, number four at 9.3%. And Joe Biden, maybe the shocker, finished in fifth with 8.4%. Sam, what's your read?
Well, the big story is Amy Klobuchar. She was fifth in Iowa. She was in the mix, but she came forward in the last week, particularly fueled by that debate performance. I mean, she was the only person, when the moderator said, does anyone have on the stage here any concerns about the fact that you may have a nominee who is a declared socialist? And she raised her hand. And she said later to reporters, and I agree with her, everyone should have raised their hands. Now, Bernie Sanders has a base, as Donald J. Trump has a base. But that base, I don't think, is sufficiently large enough to propel him past the campaign that Trump would run against him. I mean, Bernie Sanders honeymooned in Moscow. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think he did anything wrong. Can you see Donald J. Trump pointing that out like every 5 minutes? And then went on to talk about socialism will never come to America, although most Americans are on some sort of program of government relief, whether it's Medicare, whether it's food stamps, go down the line, more Americans than half are on a socialist-type program. But I think Bernie Sanders, while he won narrowly, 2% over Pete Buttigieg, just 2%, I mean, this young guy is coming on strong, is not going to be the party nominee. I think there will be moves to block him. For instance, Amy Klobuchar yesterday and Pete Buttigieg combined, they're the moderates, okay, because Joe Biden, good guy, God love him, is out of it. He's gone. I think after the primary, well, maybe not Nevada, he'll limp on to South Carolina. But if his support from the African-American community has bled away, as it's already bleeding away in the polls down there, I think he'll drop out of the race. So you'll have the moderates combined then against, well, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren to some extent. But I think she may not be mortally wounded at this point, but she's wounded badly. And let me just say this before I finish my monologue and let you have a word edgewise, because it's your program, Scott. There was a big winner last night, the man who wasn't there, Michael Bloomberg. Watch him. I think there's a good chance he'll be the nominee of the Democratic Party.
Well, and Sam, that is very interesting, and there's a lot of ground to go back and cover here, because people thought Bernie would win New Hampshire. I don't think that that is the big shock last night. I think the big shock is that Buttigieg, who won Iowa, which I don't think anybody saw that coming, now is finishing within 1% of Bernie Sanders. What has happened that has become so appealing about Pete Buttigieg?
Well, he's an appealing man. He's a good guy. I remember this story of just the opposite happened to Lyndon Johnson. As president, he did a lot of things in the first year, and he thought that was wonderful, but he was railing in the Oval Office one day to his confidants and said, why don't they like me? They like this John Kennedy. They liked him. They're all the Kennedys, but they don't like me, and I did all these things. And the guy who spoke up was the former Secretary of State with Harry Truman, who said, well, Mr. President, you're not a very likable man. Well, just the opposite for Pete. He's a likable person, a likable man, and he has a program of moderation that appeals to a lot of Democrats. Yes, he's young. A lot of people would think too young. Well, he's the 1 year away. He's now 38 from when Teddy Roosevelt became vice president and then later president. But the point is, he has momentum, and I think he's a comer. I'm not sure he'll be the nominee this year. In fact, I think he probably won't. But in the future, put your money down on Pete.
Sam, I even hate to have to ask a question like this in 2020, but people would say that Bernie Sanders' Achilles heel is socialism, as we've went through. And I don't know if it's an Achilles heel. It certainly was for Hillary, but it might just be for Hillary. Maybe Amy Klobuchar's would be being a woman. That sounds silly to say, but maybe it is. But is Pete Buttigieg's Achilles heel the gay issue?
Well, a few years ago, I would have said yes. But we're moving very rapidly. We're moving much more rapidly toward not just acceptance of different lifestyles and different sexual makeups that the good Lord and two parents provided someone with, but it's not just acceptance, but a realization that this is life, and there's nothing wrong with it in any way, shape, or form. And I think we're moving very rapidly. If he were to not be the nominee of the Democratic Party this year, which I don't think is likely, but if he were, I don't think it would kill him. I don't think it would kill him. 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, it would have killed him from the standpoint of being able to surmount it. It's a little bit like Al Smith couldn't be president in 1928 because he was a Catholic. The data clearly shows that the anti-Catholic vote was what killed him, nothing else. Then John Kennedy did become president as a Catholic. It took a long time. I think we're moving much faster when it comes to the so-called Achilles heel that some might still believe is hanging around Buttigieg's neck.
Then we move to Amy Klobuchar. A couple weeks ago, people would have thought she was done for. The poll numbers weren't good. The money was not good. And now, here she is. There's even a new a term coined this morning, Clomentum. She finishes third. Is the woman thing an issue? We've never had a female president. She has not finished first yet. Is she the one in South Carolina that's going to... Because we don't think it's going to be Bernie. We don't think it's going to be Buttigieg in South Carolina. And with Joe Biden's poor finish last night, could Klobuchar be the one they choose in South Carolina?
Well, perhaps so. But let me just take head on the idea of a woman's issue. The data shows that 4 years ago, when it came to Hillary Clinton, there were a number of factors on her side that caused her to lose, not just the attacks from Donald J. Trump, etc. One of them was the fact still that as a woman, there were many voters out there, fewer than in the past, but many voters who still thought, no, I am not ready to go that route. And many of them were women who thought that as well as men. I think we're making progress on that line. I still think there would be a few people who would not vote for Amy Klobuchar simply because she was female. But I don't believe at this point enough, if the other things were in a line, if the other parts of her candidacy were making a lot of steam and progress, that would kill her. So I'm not going to rule her out. And if, in fact, Bernie Sanders said what claimed that he said that a woman couldn't be elected this time, I think he's wrong.
Now we look at Joe Biden. If we go back 4 years ago, people said Hillary's a flawed candidate only if we had Joe Biden. Early last year, we want Joe Biden in the race. His entry into the race last year was the biggest entry into the race. He was considered to be the front runner up until about a week ago. What has happened to Joe Biden? Is it Biden? Is it the campaign? What's going on?
No, it's Biden. Joe has always been, as he made progress as a member of the Senate and did things that a lot of people liked, a lot of Democrats liked, and independents liked, he's never been someone who stood out as, here's the tough guy, meaning tough guy in the right way, here's the guy who can get it done. Joe's a nice guy. And I'm not talking about some mistakes he's made. Everybody does make mistakes in politics or in life. But he never seemed to have that final push, that final steam, that final grit in his teeth to get it done. Now, older, slipping some, and I know about that. I'm his senior. I'm 86. Believe me, I understand. I'm just not as keen as I used to be. But it showed up in the debates. It showed up in the way he handled almost listlessly some of the tough issues that he had to confront. So I'm not surprised that Joe Biden has slipped badly. He slipped in Iowa. He slipped badly in New Hampshire. And I don't think after South Carolina he's going to be with us.
Now we turn to Michael Bloomberg, who we have not got a good chance to look at as far as on a debate stage or in a primary or in a caucus because he got in late. What is going on with Michael Bloomberg? You said it earlier on, Sam. You believe he could be the guy.
I think he's going to be the guy. Well, I'm not putting down money on it in this, but if you look at him, I think he has the things that would allow him to, yes, wrestle in the nomination of the Democratic Party, which he's joined. I mean, he was a Republican for a long time, and he became an independent. but he's joined it. At least Bernie Sanders has never joined the Democratic Party. He's not a Democrat. And Michael Bloomberg is. His main attraction to me is twofold. He has a good record as a three-term mayor of New York with a hiccup now and then, particularly in the stop-and-frisk business. Yes. He's an adult. If you look at his positions, they're moderate, moderate to the left on social issues. And as far as a businessman goes, he made money from scratch. He was a guy who came from a family. His father never made more than $6,000 a year. He put himself through college, Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, by working. And the first year after he graduated, he started giving back to the university from which he graduated. He wrote a check to Johns Hopkins for $7. By now, he's given over $1 billion to Johns Hopkins, and his philanthropy is just amazing. You want to talk about something that certainly moderates or moderates to the left believe is important? That kind of charity, this kind of program, gun control, go down the list. That is Michael Bloomberg. But the big thing, then, the second thing is, he has the money to finance a campaign. And you say, well, he's buying the election. I'm not for that. Big money today, before we get rid of Citizens United, which I hope we will, is dominating politics. Figures that no one ever thought of in percentages, dominating politics. Now, whose money would you rather have? Michael Bloomberg's, dominating in the sense that he's supporting his own campaign, and therefore, if he's elected, is not beholden to anyone, no special interest, no individual, no group, does he owe anything? Or Sheldon Adelson, and other, he's the guy in the casino owner in Las Vegas, big contributor to Trump and to the Republicans, more power to him under the rules, that's okay, and all the other people who are supporting Donald Trump, who is not a billionaire. He couldn't finance himself if he wanted, but he's being supported by that money. Now, if he's reelected, you think he owes someone? You think a few favors are going to be expected? Yes. So I'll take Bloomberg's money any day.
Sam, last summer when the debate started, we had nearly 30 or maybe 30 Democratic candidates at one point. We had to have two-tier debates on different nights. More candidates than ever before, basically, is the point here. Why could we not find one that could be the person that we have to go to a Michael Bloomberg this late in the game?
Well, everyone wanted to get in. Everyone thought you could do that. A lot of candidates got in 4 years ago. And, of course, in the Republican side, Trump beat them all. Not so many on the Democratic side, but still a number. Everyone harkens back to Jimmy Carter. I mean, here's a guy who came out of nowhere, Southern governor, nice record, but not impressive from the standpoint of a world-dominating figure. And he went to Iowa, and the rest is history. So if Jimmy Carter could do it, why can't I do it? Why not to get in there? And I agree with you. I think it muddled the team for a long time, the field, rather. 20 people in it on those two stages, as you point out. But there's still time. We're still going to be able to clarify this from the standpoint of a Democratic nominee. You saw Michael Bennett drop out and Andrew Yang. They never have much of a chance. Tom Steyer, the billionaire who is still in there, will probably go on. He can finance himself to some extent, but he hasn't caught on at all. Representative Gabbard, she's not going anywhere. I guess she can stay if she wants. But we're now down to just a very few people. And as I say, I think after South Carolina, this is before we get to Super Tuesday, before the 3rd of March. I think Joe Biden may be gone. Elizabeth Warren, I'm not sure whether she can limp on. She can't raise money if she can't demonstrate she can win. And she hasn't been able to do that yet. In fact, she's been a very bad fourth place here in New Hampshire. She didn't do that well in Iowa. So where is she going to demonstrate she's the one to beat Donald Trump? I don't think so. So I think it very shortly, when we get to March, where 62 or 63% of the delegates to the convention are selected in the month of March. By the end of March, we're going to be down, I think, to maybe two, possibly three people. And there'll be, on the moderate side, so-called, Buttigieg will be there, Klobuchar may still be there, and there'll be Michael Bloomberg. On the other side, probably be Sanders. And so we'll have to go on with more primaries. We may come to a convention in which it's going to be decided at the convention, although most people who say that early on discover that, no, when you get to the convention, it's decided.
Sam, are we looking at deja vu of 2016? Bernie Sanders comes on strong. He raises a lot of money. He wins some primaries. And then a moderate comes along. They're strong. They end up getting the nomination. And all of Bernie's people can't stand that person, stay home, and President Trump is reelected president. Does that happen again? Does the Hillary Achilles heel happen here again? Is the Democratic Party got to worry about that? Bernie Bros, they call him.
It could. I remember 1968. I was in Chicago. I was tear gassed with everybody else as a reporter. In that terrible convention, Hubert Humphrey became the nominee, very badly wounded. And there was Gene McCarthy, the senator from Minnesota, and the McCarthy kids. And they were just as passionate for Gene McCarthy as the Sanders group is passionate for Sanders. And at the convention, McCarthy lost to Humphrey. Just call it the machine. In those days, Hubert Humphrey didn't have to enter a single primary. He became the nominee on the backs of state conventions that party leaders controlled. Now, did McCarthy then turn himself into a Humphrey guy? Did he urge his supporters to support Hubert? Did he work for him? No. Gene had his nose out of joint, and he and his supporters basically sat on their hands, and we got Richard Nixon. So could it happen again? Sure. If Sanders doesn't get the nomination and his faithful followers decide that's terrible and we are the far left and that's the way this country should go and I'm not going to work for this person who is now the nominee, we'll get Donald Trump again. And who do we have to blame? Well, figure it out.
You know, Sam, something interesting about this whole thing is the fact that somebody referred to it yesterday. This is Bernie's Alamo, that he's running again this time when he didn't win last time against Hillary Clinton in the primary, but he's not going to run again at this age, at this stage in his life. Does that make it worse?
Well, they're all so much older than you would imagine. I remember when Ronald Reagan was running for president in 1980. So many people said, gosh, he'll be 70 years of age shortly after he's sworn into the office if he wins, and we're not going to turn the country over to a 70-year-old man. Are you kidding? You got to be 70 now to be in the race almost. I'm exaggerating, but I'm pretty close. So Bloomberg, 77, I think 75 for Joe Biden. Sanders up there, 77. Maybe 78. I've lost track of time. I only try to figure out my own birthdays. And so it's not that unusual. But I would agree with you. If Bernie Sanders doesn't make it this time, in another 4 years, in his 80s, I think he'll probably not have much support.
It is very interesting. And Sam, when we go back and we look at everything else that's been going on, does this spell good news for President Trump?
He's had a good week. He's had a good month. He's rising. He's almost, the last poll I saw, 49% of people approved of his job, meaning at the moment. It doesn't mean he has 49% people say, I'm going to vote for this guy, but they approve of him at the moment. The economy is his big understop. I mean, it is just booming. It is going. We don't have time to go into all of the reasons, but he's going to get the credit in the minds of many, many voters. And don't argue that, no, it's not this, it's not that, it's not him, it's what have you. The economy is doing it despite him. That's not going to work with a lot of voters that he would need and he could use. So what is going to happen with Donald J. Trump? I don't think it's over yet. I don't think you reelect him at this point by any means. In fact, I think the odds favor that he will be beaten, assuming the Democrats have a candidate that is moderate enough to appeal to the middle. The whole fight later this year is going to be for the middle. You're not going to strip away a single Trump voter. Remember, he could shoot people, it wouldn't matter, wouldn't lose a vote. and you'll coalesce around a Democratic nominee who I think, depending on how many Bernie supporters, if Bernie's not the nominee, will support the ticket. And then you have to fight for the middle, and the middle will make the difference.
We're chatting with legendary newsman Sam Donaldson, so many years at ABC. This week with Sam and Cokie, Primetime Live, and covering the White House during so many tumultuous times. And don't forget, tomorrow on this program, live, 2 hours, uninterrupted, hasn't given his opinion anywhere else on any of these things or an interview anywhere else. The man who created the issue-oriented daytime talk show right here in Dayton, Ohio, a matter of fact, is where he started. Phil Donahue, live and uninterrupted, starting at 8:15 tomorrow for 2 hours. His opinions on these issues should be very interesting Thursday morning. Sam, the impeachment, let's roll this all into one here for the essence of time. The impeachment of President Trump, the acquittal of President Trump, what did you make of it?
Well, I was always for Nancy Pelosi and her view that, no, impeachment is the wrong way to go. All of the energy, all of the tactics, all of the things that ought to be done between now and Election Day should be the emphasis. Because she knew, and anyone who studied the list of Republican senators in the Senate knew, he was not going to be convicted, no matter what the charges. They came down with a couple of charges. The biggest one was one that they couldn't say was an actual crime against the criminal code. Well, I don't think the forefathers in that particular phrase meant only crimes, but there's a disagreement about that. So they came up with something. And very quickly, they had to do it. It wasn't that you could give the public time to matriculate, to massage, to think about it, as during the Nixon years, when it took over 2 years from the time of the burglary to the time when the committee of the House preferred articles of impeachment against Nixon. And during that time, people just came around and came around to what he was and what he had done. There wasn't this time here. So it was a fool's errand, and it wasted time. And, of course, it gave Trump the bragging rights of a victory. I won, and I'm absolved in all of this. Nonsense. But now we're going to move on. I want to move on as quickly as possible from the standpoint of let's not keep refighting the acquittal or the conviction that wasn't there. Let's now move on from the standpoint of what Nancy thought we should do all along, and that is concentrate on the election.
Before we move away from the acquittal, we did get something very unique, and it's still having a little bit of fallout this week, and who knows how long the fallout will be. But for the first time in an impeachment trial in the Senate, there was a man who voted against his party. He did not vote party lines. First time that's ever happened. That man is former presidential nominee for the Republican Party, current senator, Mitt Romney, and he gave a very emotional speech. Now, the fallout from that was that Mitt Romney flip-flopping the same man who met with President Trump after calling him all kinds of names for a Secretary of State job, or was that an authentic man standing there late in his political career? What do you make, Sam, of Mitt Romney?
Well, I think it was probably authentic at this point, but you properly point out that Mitt Romney condemned Trump in very strong language when Trump was running for the presidency. After Trump won, Romney comes almost hat in hand, encouraged by Trump, pulling him in like the spider said to the fly, here, come into my web, I've got something for you. And it was nothing, and it, I think, embarrassed Romney. Mitt Romney is solid in Utah. He is going to win re-election if he runs for re-election, at least at this point. Mike Lee, the conservative senator from Utah, who is the Republican also in the Senate, for the two of them from the same state, is praised by President Trump. And Mike Lee says that Mitt Romney's a great guy, and he understands the vote. He doesn't agree with it, but they're still friends. So Romney could do this and not suffer a personal political defeat in his home state. On the other hand, he is being reviled in the Republican Party. He is having not just taunts and curses given to him, but physical threats to him. I think it's unique this year, more than any other year, when if your opponent is someone you disagree with, there are a few people in this country who think it would be right to harm them physically. Who are these people? They're the ones we should do away with, not the Dreamers, not others who are good people for the country. So I think Romney did what he thought was best. I put it when it happened that he marched out of the Senate chamber and into the pages of history. And the next person who writes a book and titles it Profiles in Courage may begin with his chapter.
Very interesting. And for people who haven't seen the speech, go to YouTube and watch the speech. It's very, very interesting. Before I want to go back and pick up the State of the Union here, but this is a particular interest to me because this man appeared on this show, I think, five times over the years, and that is Roger Stone. And Roger Stone, a Trump ally, a Trump friend, has now been on trial. He was charged, he was convicted, and some sentencing guidelines came down this week for his sentence, and it looked like he was going to go to prison for possibly up to a decade. 7 to 9 years, I think, was the recommendation.
Right.
And then, all of a sudden, the Department of Justice, headed up by Bill Barr, says, we don't think that is a good idea. We don't think that the term doesn't need to be that long. And at this point, I think the four prosecutors who tried this trial have now all resigned because they wanted the sentence to be that long. President Trump has tweeted that he thinks Roger Stone has gotten the raw end of the deal here. What is going on here, Sam?
Well, what's going on is Donald J. Trump. Is anyone surprised? He was the catalyst. It wasn't the DOJ or Attorney General Barr on their own said, well, you know, I think this is unfair to this poor man. Donald Trump tweeted. He attacked the judge. You know, he loves to attack judges. Now, this judge is not a Mexican. Well, of course, the judge he first attacked and said he's a Mexican is a United States citizen, born and raised in this country. This judge is a woman, Judge Jackson. She's had some cases that before President Trump hasn't approved of, hasn't liked. So he attacked her virulently, as he attacks anyone who opposes him. But you know he's a bully. If you hit him in the nose, I don't mean physically, of course, I'm talking about in ways that hurt more, he backs down. Judge Jackson can't do that. She's on the bench. She's well-respected in the D.C. Circuit. And so here she is, having to contemplate a 7 to 9 sentence, and he attacks her for her conduct at the trial. She was also the Manafort judge, you know. And the DOG suddenly discovers that this sentence, which is within the guidelines, it is the guideline, 7 to 9, it is not unprecedented for the Department of Justice to argue against the guidelines in a particular case, but it's very unusual. Suddenly, Bill Barr, the Attorney General, and the Department of Justice decide that this poor man, Roger Stone, and if you know Roger Stone, unless you're his very, very good friend, you don't describe him as one of the great guys in our political system. This poor man is being unjustly, perhaps, sent to prison. So, as you point out, not only do the four prosecutors resign from the prosecution, but one of them has resigned from the Justice Department. I don't know him, and I don't even know his name at this point that I can recall, but there is also someone who just can't take it. I don't have to do this. I hope he can find work, and I hope he's not a target particularly of the president's ire, but it is. It's a badge of merit.
Sam, I was thinking about this morning, the guidelines being lowered, and I, like I say, Roger Stone has been on this show four or five times over the years. He was on up until right before he was indicted, so the end of 2017, I believe it was, he was on in November. Does he serve a day of jail time? Because I see the pardon Roger Stone things out there. I see the guidelines being dropped now. I see what the president is tweeting. Does Roger Stone ever spend a day behind bars?
Well, you're right. The president can pardon him and pardon Manafort and pardon the president can believe. Pardon me. I'm particularly hoarse this morning. I talk too much. The president believes he can pardon himself. I think there's a lot of scholars that think the Constitution does not really say that, and he will do so. I will suspect, as long as he has the pardon power, he'll do so. One of the reasons, just one of the reasons, I didn't want him to be convicted in the Senate was that the then President Pence, the Vice President, becomes the President, would have the power to pardon him, pardon Mr. Trump. And I think when he leaves office, whatever that is, a prosecutor will bring him before a grand jury and a petit jury, and we'll see whether evidence of a crime, not an impeachable offense, but a true crime or crimes can be proved against him. The pardon power is a wonderful thing. It's the last resort that in the hands of a president who is fair and who tries to cause justice to really be served, to be able to take someone who has gone through the criminal justice system and say, I think, on balance, we're going to not send you to jail, not put you down. And I like the idea that we have one person who can do that. But it has to be in the hands of a reasonable, fair, and honest man. And that's not the case now.
If you had to bet, do you think Roger Stone goes to prison?
I can't bet on that.
It,
if I had to bet, knowing Trump as I do, knowing the sheriff in Arizona, Aparo, who talk about discrimination against brown people, Spanish people, was pardoned by President Trump and the others he's pardoned. So if you forced me to bet, I'd say, yeah, but I'm going to put down only a dime, not a dollar, okay?
I'm going to go back here and pick up the State of the Union, because in many people's eyes, that was maybe the most eventful State of the Union there has been, and certainly the most eventful there has been in quite a while, between a non-handshake from President Trump to Pelosi to the tearing up of a speech at the end of the State of the Union speech by Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi that irritated a lot and made a lot of people happy. What did you make of the State of the Union, Sam?
It was a great reality show. Trump knows how to put on a reality show. He did it. You can argue he came to the presidency only because he did The Apprentice, you're fired, and he did it in a sense that everyone enjoyed, but it was thought just to be a television reality show. No, he understands the mechanics of presentation, whether it's on television, whether it's in his rallies, where he has his faithful people there as he denounces judges and Democrats, calls them treasonable people, and the news media and all of that. He understands how to push the buttons of people who are of like mind and who normally suppress their worst instincts because it's not PC at all. He says, no, it's PC, it's wonderful, get out there, and they do. So that's what we saw at the State of the Union. Now, people say to me, was Nancy Pelosi right to tear up his speech on camera? I wouldn't have done it. From the standpoint of advising her, Sam, should I tear up the speech? I would have said, no, Madam Speaker, I understand how you feel, because I was watching that too, and as I watched the safety of my living room here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I got angrier and angrier at this man there who lied about his record, lied about situations, called down in the most vicious language other people, and then staged these wonderful, used people as props. That beautiful family. Here is this wife and her two children with her husband in Afghanistan in harm's way. And here he is. I heard the drums roll, the bugles sound. Poor woman was in tears, as she should have been. And Donald J. Trump was smiling at his performance. So I can understand Nancy Pelosi. As she said later, it was the most civil thing, or it was that I could think to do, a demonstration that what she had read, what she had heard, was a pack of lies and not worthy of a president of the United States reporting seriously to a Congress. Yes, president particularly running re-election, tout their record. We were able to accomplish this. We were able to reduce joblessness and all of that. And that's okay. That's the State of the Union. But I thought what we saw was a performance, and I kind of joined the crowd, which is now saying, let's do away and go back. My friend George F. Will points out that until modern times, presidents said a State of the Union by writing it down and sending up the document to Congress. But once we have radio and television, hey, it's too too tempting to want to talk to the voters. But I may say to them, if this is the kind of State of the Union, forget it. You know, it began several years ago when Joe Wilson, the Republican congressman, yelled out as Barack Obama is delivering a State of the Union address, "You lie!" Well, thank you, Congressman Wilson, for your point of view, but could you have presented it another occasion, another place? No. It's become a Roman spectacle, and we don't need that.
Something else interesting that went on at the State of the Union for most people, every afternoon all over this country, people hear one voice, that is Rush Limbaugh. They have for a long time. Now, all of us very sadly learned recently that Rush has stage 4 lung cancer. That's not good at all. But he was presented with the Congressional Medal of Freedom, an award that's been presented to Rosa Parks, Mother Teresa. Were you shocked by that? Does that mean something?
I was not shocked because, again, I believe I know Donald J. Trump. I've known him for 35 years. I interviewed him in 1990 when his businesses were failing. And that interview is classic in that you see the young Trump. He finished a sentence in those days without wandering off into irrelevancy. But you see the same man that you see today in formation. So I wasn't shocked, and, oh, how could this be? Of course it could be. I would recommend, even if people don't read the New York Times normally, that you look at just an op-ed column from 2 or 3 days after that happened. And it was not slamming it in so many words. It was not condemning the presentation of the Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh in so many words. It was simply saying, here are some of the things over the years that Rush Limbaugh has said. And then you see him calling a young woman fighting a slut. And you see him, I mean, I'm not going to go through the language. Rush Limbaugh, you compare him with Mother Teresa? That may be an extreme. But Rush Limbaugh has incited division in the country, has called people the kinds of names that only a Donald Trump can match. And if that's what the Medal of Freedom is for, again, like the presentation of the State of the Union I've just gone over, it's a sad day.
Last week, Bill Maher, certainly not a fan of President Trump, called it President Trump's best week so far as president. If that is happening in February of 2020, at this point, what are the chances of him getting reelected in November, which is not that far off?
I don't think the chances are really good. It could happen. It could happen if, again, Bernie's troops won't support the ticket, if Bernie's not the nominee. It could happen for a number of reasons. But I don't think they're really good. He has a base of about 30-31%, according to all of the data we have. Now, on any given day, more people can say, yes, I like the job he's doing. And he's on a high at this moment. But the rest of the country is about 70%, which doesn't mean that some of them are not going to vote for Donald J. Trump. But that's what I mean about the rest of the country. The Democrat side has its true believers also. I mean, yes, you can't strip them away from a Democratic nominee. But the middle is there, and the middle is not voting until November. Between now and then, in 1972, check this statistic, in February of 1972, George McGovern, a prospective nominee of the Democratic Party who did become the nominee, in the Gallup poll was 2 points higher than President Nixon. Well, it didn't do him much good in November. Of course, Trump is much higher than 2 points over some of his rivals. But if you look at the rivals from the standpoint of the way the polls show who can beat Trump, almost all of them at the moment are, according to the public, beating Trump in November. The idea that he is someone who can't be beaten and who has a really big leg up that will not disappear between now and November is an idea that comes from people who don't know the political history of our country in modern times and don't know the ways that come together on election day. Jimmy Carter, on the Friday before the election, which sent him home. And by a big margin, his polls, Ronald Reagan's polls, and the public polls were all dead even. Now, check it. Don't take my word for it. Go check it. On Tuesday, they weren't dead even. He was defeated badly. Over the weekend, people simply saw that the Ayatollah Khomeini gave him one more shove. Give it to him. And they were saying, we've got inflation, the interest rates, my God, he's a good guy, a nice guy, but I don't think so. And we'll take a chance on Ronald Reagan. So don't count anyone in or out between now and November, but certainly don't count Donald J. Trump reelected.
Sam, final question here. Because of what we've seen with the acquittal, the impeachment, and everything else we've seen, between now and the end of President Trump's presidency, whether that is next January or 4 years from next January, at this point, does he have more autonomy than any other president ever? Is there anything he could do that would get him out of that office?
I don't know what it could be. Again, I accept him his word, shoot someone at midday on Madison Avenue, and it doesn't lose a single vote. Say that the second article of the Constitution, which is the executive, gives him the power to do anything he wants. Well, that's not true, of course. But I haven't seen any people jump up, and except the Democrats, and say, well, that's ridiculous. He has been able to get away with things. They're in the courts. Now, there are cases in the courts making their way to the Supreme Court, which will have a final word on many of them, which will show whether, to answer your question, is there anything he could do that would cause people to just turn against him en masse? Well, for instance, one of his lies in the State of the Union was that he will protect pre-existing conditions in any health care program. Now, he said that at the same time that his Justice Department has entered a case against pre-existing conditions that's going to the Supreme Court. They're actively working on behalf of Donald J. Trump to persuade the court to rule in a favor that would rule against the preservation of pre-existing conditions in health care. Do his people know that? Do people in the middle know that? Well, if they read certain newspapers, they listen to certain broadcasters, and I'm not talking about Fox, I'm not talking about Rush Limbaugh, maybe they don't know that, but if they read and know something about other things, they know that. Now what do they think? Is that enough to remove him, that he'll lie about something like that? Apparently not. I think he's going to be removed in November. I could be wrong, obviously. I think that's where the fight is, and that's where the remedy is. That is the terrible medicine that kills the tapeworm. It comes in November.
There are two things we have to do before we wrap up today, and one is remind people tomorrow. Phil Donahue, legendary king of talk television, created the issue-oriented daytime talk show, had Gerald Ford, Bill Clinton, George Bush, all on his program over the years. He does not do interviews anymore. Tomorrow, starting at 8:15 Eastern Time, uninterrupted for 2 hours, Phil Donahue talking about everything we talked about today, and so much more. It will happen live tomorrow. You won't want to miss this for love nor money. 29 years on the air. And then, of course, we have to thank unconditionally our guest today, Sam Donaldson, because people love to hear him, I love to hear him, and Sam, it is always my honor, pleasure, for you to be on this program.
Remind Donahue, when I was on this program years ago, he said, Donaldson has lost his mind. Tell him that hurt me terribly. Maybe he was right. And I've enjoyed being on your program also, Scott.
Sam, take care, and we'll talk soon.
Good. Bye-bye.
The legendary Sam Donaldson, and Donahue tomorrow hasn't spoken anywhere on anything. That's an exclusive. 8:15 to 10 o'clock tomorrow. Charlie Evers in 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Telephone number 740-262-5638. Email meadowslawncare43302@gmail.com. Requirements. Book Meadows Lawn.